Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Carla Rippert-McCarty. She's a Christian mystic and librarian by training, who formed a partnership in 1968 with John Elkins, physics professor and commercial airline pilot, to begin a serious and systematic investigation into the UFO phenomenon. And the partnership grew into the non-profit organisation LL Research, which is short for Love and Light Research, which is based in Louisville, Kentucky, and exists to this day. I'll carry on with a decent introduction here, so hold on for a minute, Carla. As the 60s came to a close, their investigations led them to information regarding telepathic contact with beings we on Earth would consider ETs, and from this point forward, the nature of their research began to shift from the outer evidence of UFO phenomenon and contact, i.e. abductees, physical evidence of UFOs, eyewitness accounts, etc., to the purely spiritual dimension of the message that the UFOs apparently were here to offer. So using this information and refining their protocols for telepathic contact, or channeling, as it is commonly referred to now, they were able to begin receiving channeled messages from the UFO entities regarding the spiritual situation of humankind and the potentials of the Earth illusion for the spiritual evolution of humanity. And we're going to have a good discussion, a good interview with Carla, and particularly about her book. Welcome to the program, Carla.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. It's so good of you to ask me.
Well, I'm looking forward to this immensely. I've had a good read, if not a total read, of your book, and it's extremely interesting. What I'd first like to ask you is, when did you begin your whole series of books and the actual date of your channeling? I mean, you had this early interest, which I've just mentioned to our listeners. So where did it really start?
Where do I start in talking about that, you mean?
Well, I'm thinking mainly of after your initial interest in the UFO phenomenon.
Oh, well, how did it all start as far as how I got into it? Mm-hmm. When I was in college, I had a boyfriend who was a student of Don Elkins, and I heard that Don was starting a silent meditation group. The intention that Don had was to try to create a UFO contactee group, and he was moving on information that he had gotten from UFO contactee material that he had received from fellow researchers in Detroit, Michigan. However, he didn't tell the students that. He simply said to the 12 students that he asked to be part of this experiment that he was going to have silent meditations once a week. For my part, I love going to church. As you said earlier, I'm a Christian mystic. I'm an Episcopalian, but I don't do the dogma. I gently leave the dogma aside and just love Jesus.
Yeah.
And the thing about going to the Episcopal Church is that you have the wonderful, comfortable words. You have a 3-year cycle of all the lessons, you know, the pearls from the Bible, and you have the music, you have preaching, you have a beautiful ritual, you have the Holy Communion, but you don't have silence. And I was looking at that point for a good silent meditation group, and I thought, perfect. So I asked Professor Elkins if I could join the group, and he gave his permission. So in January of 1962, 12 engineering students, all men, and I, the lone woman in the group, settled down for Don's experiment. Through the years, of course, it became obvious it was an experiment, and most of the 12 original men soon began channeling. However, at that time, I was not interested. I enjoyed the cosmic sermonettes, as they have been called, but I didn't want to produce material. I just wanted to have silent meditation. So that's what I did. And so I didn't get into learning how to channel until 1974. At that time, most of the original members of the group had naturally, you know, graduated, gotten jobs, gone to the four quarters of the earth.
Yes.
And Don was out of a subject to continue his experiment with. And he said, listen, as a favor to me, would you learn how to channel so that I can continue collecting this information? Now, a side note on that, the reason that he wanted to collect as much information as possible is that the experiment had been tainted by the fact that a contactee from the Detroit group visited the Louisville group and channeled. And the channeling basically said, you know, we've been giving you all these thoughts and you haven't been responding, you haven't been speaking them forth, and we wondered why you did that. So all the men who heretofore had been making clicking sounds and gurgling sounds and sounds like a window shade being let go and flap, 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 you know. They'd been making these noises which would indicate that something was trying to come through, but they just didn't know what to do after that. And I did find that when I learned channeling, the first thing that you have to learn is that it feels like your thoughts. You just have to trust and produce that thought, speak that thought, and then you'll get a flow. But they found that out the hard way by this fellow from the Detroit group channeling. And at that point, the experiment was no longer a solid, completely clean experiment. However, Don felt that the data was interesting enough that in that it reproduced the Detroit group's information without the Louisville people knowing what that information was, that Don felt it was interesting enough to go ahead and collect, because that's what you do if you have a faulty experiment. You get as much data as possible so that at least with a large amount of this material you can begin to make some suppositions and so forth. So that's what Don was doing, and it's actually what we're still doing. But in 1974, I began to channel, and I wasn't a good student at first. You know, my first 2 months were full of messages like, we are those of Hatan, we are having trouble with this instrument. And
yeah,
that would be it. But I persevered, and finally, after about, I'd say, 6 months, I was able to channel when I would tune and I would open myself, I would get a spirit. And so I almost immediately became very interested in making my channeling better, because it's very easy to channel. It's very difficult to channel well. So I spent years after that observing what made for a good session, and came to various conclusions. Basically, the conclusions were that if you got fear-based questions or if you got specific questions, this particular contact would not work for you.
Right.
If you managed to get questions about spiritual principles and questions that were not fear-based, even if they had to do with phenomena in the world, you'd get good results. I began, you know, honing the questions before I would accept them, before we would start a session. And then as for myself, I found that the more carefully I tuned my own consciousness, as if I were a radio receiver tuning to the right station, the better station I would receive. So I began tuning, and I still to this day, I tune for about 20 minutes to half an hour before a session. And then the other element is the challenging of the spirit. You need in doing this work to be somebody. You need to have 2 feet to stand on, metaphysically speaking. It doesn't matter what that piece of turf is. You just need to own it. I'm a mystical Christian, and so I challenge in the name of Jesus the Christ. I ask the Spirit to say that Jesus is Lord. If he can do that 3 times running, I hook up with him, them, whoever, and see what that contact has to say. If they cannot meet that challenge, I I dismiss that spirit and, yes. and go looking again. And these are the basic things that I've learned as far as creating a better piece of information. My hope here, and it's a hope I've had all my life, is to be of service to the Creator. And it has seemed to me, both as a researcher and as a mystical Christian, that this particular service that I've sort of stumbled into looking for silent meditation has been one that has helped a lot of people. I get a lot of correspondence back from people who like the transcripts or read my books or like my articles or whatever. And as long as that feedback continues to be good, I will continue working in this area to produce material that may be helpful to seekers.
Yes, yes. Indeed, your experience in channeling, which is now quite vast, I see enabled you to actually write a book called A Channeling Handbook. Do I read that right, that it is telling people how to develop that ability?
Well, it doesn't tell people how to do it.
Right.
I'm against that completely because of the fact that it's fraught with danger.
Right.
And I don't mean to be dramatic. It's just that I've seen more than one person, unfortunately, about a half a dozen people through 30 years of doing the channeling myself. I've seen students disregard my very careful and explicit instructions. And,
yes.
you know, I say, don't do this at home. Don't do this alone. Do this only in the presence of the group and with a senior channel there to watch your back. However, there are people who will always feel that I really don't know what I'm talking about and that they will be fine and that they're just going to practice, you know, and then they start coming up with information that says that they are either the next incarnation of Jesus the Christ, depending on sex, mm. or that they are going to be the mother of the next incarnation of Jesus the Christ. And very questionable material like that. And then it goes from bad to worse, and you get paranoia and other evidence of mental illness, and then there's a break, a psychotic break, and the person ends up in the mental institution. The basic problem here is that we really are radios. We all really can pick up discarnate sources of information, and many of those discarnate sources are either mischievous or downright negatively oriented. I don't like to use the term evil because we think we know what that means, and we really don't. But there is a definite break in between service to others-oriented sources and service to self-oriented sources. And if
yes.
you get, it's a crowded universe, and so if a person that is just playing around with it, say on the Ouija board, or that likes the idea of channeling and so just decides, oh, I'm just going to do this at home. You can get into real trouble. So in the book about the channeling, I didn't talk about the process itself.
No, right.
I talked about the tuning issue. I talked about the challenging issue. I talked a lot about figuring out who you are because, you see, in the world, people assume that you are who you are by what your outer appearance is. You're your sex,
yes, yes.
your job, your race, et cetera, et cetera. And they think they know who you are. Nobody ever comes up to you at a party and says, who are you? They say, what do you do?
Mm.
So, I mean, you skim along the surface of life in terms of working in the world, but when you're working with the metaphysical world, the inner planes, the unseen realms, which is where you're going to get these channel sources of information, you're moving from the physical world, which the Confederation calls space-time, to the metaphysical realms, the invisible realms, which the Confederation sources, which I have channeled for many years, call time-space. And in time-space, the thoughts that you have are solid. They're thought forms. and your vibration is your name. And you are dealing with a completely different creation. The rules are different. And so you can't go into, the attempt to create a bond between you and a discarnate entity by saying, I'm a woman, I'm a librarian, I'm a researcher, I write books. That doesn't work. You have to say, here's what I believe, this is what I live for, this is what I would die for if necessary. You need to get to that level of confidence and surety, and at that point you have become a real person to those entities whom you meet in the metaphysical realm. So I talk a lot about that in the channeling handbook. And by the way, Mike, I have improved on that in latter years, because as I get older, I'm going to be 66 this summer.
Right.
Yes. I've faced my mortality with more directness, and realized that I won't always be here to offer these thoughts, and that I feel that the sources are good, and that, you know, it would be good for me to leave behind other channels that are able to channel the particular sources that I learned how to channel. And so I started a series of channeling intensives a couple of years ago. We have had 5 of them now, and that will be ongoing. And I'm happy to say that there are about 4 channels out of the initial group of 16 that have developed a real gift for the channeling and are now starting that arduous but, of course, labor of love work of refining that gift.
Right. Now, a part of your book obviously relates to your contact with the Ra group. And there is an emphasis, and it's shown in the title of your book, on the law of one. Can you, in simple terms, explain what the law of one is?
The basic premise of the law of one is that all things are one. Physicists also say that everything in the universe is interconnected these days. So it's not a far-out idea at all. If you look at string theory and other new frontiers in physics, you see that it is indeed a physical actuality. We are interconnected. Everything that we do just sort of goes on forever and interconnects ultimately with everything else. It is not only a metaphysical truth, it's also a physical truth. So this one thing is of a certain nature, says the Confederation, and that nature is love, unconditional and absolute love. They call it the Logos, which John does also in the Gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And that Word, John wrote in Greek, and the Word is Logos in Greek. So Christian and Confederation philosophies come together there. This love, then, that is the infinite creator and is all that there is, decided to know itself by the first distortion of the law of one, which is free will. And because the Logos, this intelligent infinity that is the creator, was of this certain nature, which is the Logos, which is love, that creation was of a certain kind. In other words, everything in the creation is also part of the Creator and also shares that nature, that basic nature of love. The creation was manifested by the third distortion of the law of one after free will and love, which is light. So the manifested creations came into being according to the laws of physics. And the sublogoi, which were the suns, developed places for people to be and then allowed those entities to begin experiencing life. And we are the sub-sub-logoi. We are children of God. This is basically the beginning of the Law of One. Once you see those first principles of unity, free will, love, and might, then you see how this particular world works. And they describe a wonderful school of souls that exists through seven grades or seven densities. We're in the third grade. The first density or grade is the density of rocks and mountains and wind and so forth, the density of the elements. The second density is the density of movement towards the light, which is plants and animals. But they don't have any self-awareness. In third grade, the animal, which is the human being, is a grade 8 body, but has self-awareness, has the ability to develop the spirit for the first time. And so this density is called the density of choice. And in that density of choice, the choice has to do with whether you're going to be service to self or service to others. There's a polarity involved. So everybody that I am talking to, I feel absolutely sure is service to self. I mean, excuse me, service to others in their polarity and really hoping to be creatures of love and those who want to spread that wonderful energy of the Creator that they feel inside and that for which they yearn. And, you know, we're all creatures that yes. want to love and to be loved. So that's what we're involved in right now in the density of choice, is making that choice of polarity and then maintaining that choice and making the choice again and again, building that polarity until we are able to graduate into the density of love, which is fourth density, and which is coming up for all of us very shortly. So
yes.
after that, to finish out the cosmology, the fifth density is the density of wisdom. The sixth density is the density of unity, where wisdom and love are combined until they become one. And then in the seventh density, it's called the density of foreverness. And in that density, there is the final letting go of everything having to do with an individual ego. And that turning towards the source and the ending, the one infinite creator, and moving with ever-increasing spiritual gravity towards the Alpha and the Omega until we are taken up into the infinite invisible once again. And
yes.
when all of the infinite creation has made that journey, then the Creator breathes again, and out of timelessness comes a new first density. So it's an infinite creation, yet it has many beginnings. That's
yes.
basically the Law of One. All is one, that one thing is love.
That's great, yeah. I would mention there for our listeners that everything you're talking about there is covered in your book, which is actually called Living the Law of One, 101, The Choice. And that's obviously available directly from you. But what I would like to refer to is the Ra group. If I remember correctly, they were with you for about 3 to 4 years when you channeled their messages. And there was an interesting little story connected with the Ra group, which you might amplify on if you have any more details, is that you said they appeared to the builders of the Great Pyramid in Egypt, and they assisted in the building of it.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Are you right? You mentioned that the Ra group appeared to the builder of the Great Pyramid in Egypt, and they assisted in the building by thought. And I wondered whether you had any other information on that, because I thought that was and it was a very interesting aspect of their work.
It is a stunning little sidebar to the Law of One information.
Yeah.
What occurred there was that they first attempted, those of Ra, which those of Ra being a very large group of they call it a social memory complex. In other words, everybody in that society decided they wanted to serve together and serve as one. So various entities within the Ra group manifested physically on Earth and spoke to Ishnaten, husband of Nefertiti, a pharaoh in the ancient days of Egypt. And Ishnaten declared the Law of One and even created a whole new city in the desert there, Heliopolis, to celebrate the Law of One. But, of course, he died young under mysterious circumstances. And shortly after he died, the priests had become thoroughly corrupted, and those of Ra left the vicinity as far as being in physical form. They found that it simply didn't work. So while they were there, one thing that they did was to create the Great Pyramid at Giza and other pyramids that were lesser pyramids but were intended to balance the earth, like a series of belly buttons that sort of normalized energies coming around the earth.
Yeah.
And in the Great Pyramid, the intention was to create a place of initiation and healing. They, using sacred geometry, they reproduced the pyramids that they had used during their third density, and which they had found very helpful for their own study. And there were jobs which the sacred geometry offered the intake at the bottom of the pyramid created the opportunity for initiation, because if you go down under the pyramid, there is an almost complete, you know, vacuum as far as anything being able to come into the mind, and you're very, very isolated. So it recapitulates the feeling of your own death. And it was very shamanic. There was this feeling that the priests that they were initiating would be able to have this experience and rise from it with a renewed and refined appreciation for life and a renewed desire to become purified channels for the Law of One. The King's Chamber position was a healing position, and there was a lot of hope that the people of Egypt, all of the people, would be able to come to the pyramid. A priest would take them to the King's Chamber, and as they lay there in the King's Chamber, there would be an opportunity for them to sort of hit the reset button on their health, so that that experience would enable them to start over and have good health. And interestingly enough, of course, it's very well documented that if you put something like a razor blade in the King's Chamber position in a pyramid with the same proportions as the Great Pyramid at Giza, that the razor blade will never need sharpening, food stays fresh, and so forth and so on. It's very well documented. There are healing properties to that position. Those are the main things about the pyramid that Ra spoke about. Don, of course, questioned those of Ra on this subject fairly extensively, and you can go to www.llresearch.org and find the Law of One channelings there, and just Google, do a site search on pyramid, and you'll be able to see all of the information that we have collected on the pyramids.
Right. Now, I think we ought to get into some parts of your book where you quote the information given to you by the Confederation of Planets. You talk of the life here as a game board of people being players in the game. Now, what is the game that we're playing?
Well, I call it the game of life. I was looking for a way in writing 101. By the way, Mike, the 101 is an Americanism. It's when you go to college here in the U.S., your first year you take philosophy 101 and history, world history 101 and so forth. And so I was looking for a way to indicate to readers that this was a readable, you know, accessible way to learn about the Law of One, because really the source documents, the five volumes of the Law of One that I originally channeled in 1981 through 84, contain the kind of dense information that you might expect, say, from German philosophy. If you get a philosopher, or if you get someone that really resonates to the material, they're going, I can't put the book down. But if you get somebody like you and me, you're going, this is hard stuff to read. So I thought that I had done a good job of translating that material into regular person's speaking when I wrote A Wanderer's Handbook in 2001. But no, I really hadn't. I hadn't reckoned with the fact that not everybody goes to college, not everybody has the same background that I do, and people were saying, well, I don't understand that either. So I thought, okay, we're going to start from scratch here. We are going to create an entry-level document using seventh-grade reading level, no more, and only what you've learned through the 11th grade in high school, which is our national average as far as education. So I wanted everybody to be able to pick this book up. Anyway, that's the 101. Tell me again your question, because I got off on a jag there.
Yes. You were talking
about life, I remember, yes.
Yeah, okay, fine.
So the game of life is what we all play. I mean, it may seem sacrilegious or disrespectful to call life a game, but in truth it is. Whether we play it on the flat game board that we all know about in everyday life, or whether we play it on the enhanced game board that the Confederation suggests we might use, on the flat game board, we're born, we grow up, we select a mate or we don't, we work for a living, we pay our bills, we eat, drink, we're merry, and eventually we push up the daisies. That's the shape of the game. And, yeah, on the flat game board, that's pretty much it. And, you know, there's something quietly desperate about thinking of life as on that flat game board with no enhanced settings to make it worth your while. And yet, if the Confederation information is taken into consideration, we actually have quite an interesting game going here, because you see the choice, the book is called 101, The Choice. The choice is of polarity, of course. And everything that we do, that when we run into an ethically interesting situation, every single time we make a choice, we are playing the game of life. And so you sort of get the rules in your head, and I go through the rules. You know, after I talk about polarity, then I start talking about the body that we have that meets these choices. And on the enhanced game board, it's not just the physical body with an intellect. It's the energy body that takes in the energy of the infinite creator, runs it up through the heart and on up through the top of the head and out. And this energy body works in a certain way. And so I talk about each part of the energy body, each chakra or energy center, and how you get that energy center open and flowing, and how you can use it and you know, do the very best you can to keep your heart open, and how important it is to keep your heart open. And every time that you make a choice of love instead of service to self, well, the way I explain service to others and service to self is pretty simple. If you've got a sandwich and you meet somebody that's hungry, and you break the sandwich up and you give the person half, you're being of service to others.
Yeah.
And Jesus did this all the time, you know, the breads, the loaves, and the fishes. If you give the person the bigger half, then you're really cranking up service to others. If you give the person the whole sandwich and say, eat, eat, then you've really gone over the top. So you're just basically going through life looking for ways to love people and to spread that good feeling. A smile on the street is service to others of a much higher order than most people realize. It's like an infection. If you meet everything that you come to in life with the attitude of all is well, this is a gift from spirit, I'm going to unwrap this gift and see what my best response would be. And you know the rules, you know, service to others, you know, et cetera. Then you're sort of like a spiritual athlete, and every day is another day on the game board with a capital G. And you're a player with a capital P. And at the end of this game, which is, it's a long game. I mean, you play it for your whole life. At the end of it, you have the opportunity to graduate. And unlike those religions that speak of a heaven or a hell, the Confederation offers the idea of going on to fourth density, either service to others, fourth density, positive, or service to self, fourth density, negative. Or the third choice is you don't graduate. You stay in third density and you go to another planet, which is in its third density phase, for more experiences on this game board of choice. So, you know, me, I want to go on. I want to experience that fourth density game board with all the many, many more choices that come when you have the fourth density light instead of third density light. So I'm looking forward to graduation. And I think that's a very exciting part of the Confederation information, having to do with what happens when you die. So the end of the game, you see, isn't truly an ending, but it's a beginning. But what we're doing here is laid out very clearly. We're learning to make that choice for service to others. We're getting our polarity up to 51% service to others or more so that we can graduate and go on to the density of love and understanding, fourth density.
Right. Let me ask you there, because it is appropriate. You talk of us working for our graduation, and I think you call it the harvest, the 2012 harvest, which I know many people are interested in. How do we prepare ourselves in the short time that is left?
Well, the reason that I wrote 101 was that there is only a short time left, and I wanted people to have a really easy-to-use handbook on playing the game of life and getting ready to graduate. Basically, if your heart's right, if you're doing your best to be of service to other people, to love everybody the best way you know, you're going to graduate. The rest is just refinement on that basic theme. But the great thing about the Confederation information about 2012 is that it's not that which alarms one as many of the sources do. Many of the sources, including Christianity, suggest that at the turn of the age, there will be a sudden shift, and either our world will blink out and not be here anymore, or there will be a great rapture, and those who have made it, you know, will be taken up and transported somehow to the heaven world. And those that didn't make the grade will be dashed into that realm in which there is endless gnashing of teeth and no problem with lighting your cigarettes. So in stark contrast to this, the Confederation suggests that what you do when you graduate, you rode in, they say, in your energy body. And an energy body interconnected with the physical body for the duration of the incarnation. At the surcease of the physical incarnation, the energy body lets go. of the physical body, and you ride out of this incarnation on the same vehicle in which you rode in, the energy body. So in your energy body, you now have a reunion with your guidance system and with all of those entities who have been dear to you, and you set about walking the steps of light. And the way the steps of light are organized, you have carefully set increments of light that are more light in each step. And at a certain point, the light ceases being third density light and becomes fourth density light. So the energy body that is you walks those steps upward, upward into ever increasing light until the light begins to feel uncomfortable, at which point you naturally will stop. If you stopped within the third density steps, then you will reincarnate for the next bunch of incarnations, according to the Confederation, in another third density planet. And you will continue learning the lessons of polarity. If you've not stopped until fourth density, you've graduated, and your next incarnation will be in fourth density, the density of love and understanding. So there's no judge. There's only where you're comfortable, and you decide that yourself. This is the environment I would like. And then from that point on, everything is laid on. The forces of the universe are very careful to guard those increments of light so that everybody gets the same shot. Everybody gets the same trip up the steps. And nobody gets to fall off to the side. So it's a very protected way to think about what happens after you die. What happens at 2012 or what happens after 2012. Because the Confederation reports do not suggest that each individual will transfer into fourth density at 2012. What they suggest is that the planet itself is transiting to fourth density in 2012. And I think that all of the people that are listening to these words have had the experience of the incredible, powerful interpenetration of third density light by fourth density light as fourth density becomes ever closer on this planet. And what that means is that the vibrations of love and understanding that this light holds, this fourth density light holds, are causing us to almost be forced to look at every single piece of our personalities that has not been integrated into the whole. Naturally, all of us, especially as we try to be good people, prefer not to focus on our shadow side, but we all have one. We are all that there is, and all that there is involves 360 degrees of ways of being. So we're not only the good person, we're also the robber or the adulterer, all of those things, not in activation, but in terms of having those elements to our deep personality. A spiritually mature person has gradually gone about collecting all those seemingly negative bits of the shadow side into the integrated self and has said, yes, I am that, but I do ask that portion of myself to come with me into the light and work for the good. And so we're really getting slapped in the face by any element of our personality that we haven't acknowledged. So that's really, it's gotten to be a lot harder, I think, to polarize to the positive because we have so little choice now but to focus on and pay attention to everything we did not want to know about ourselves.
Yeah.
But it's doable. It's a doable thing here. The big problem is that after 2012, the third density light will have waned and that sun will have set. So here we will be with third density wiring trying desperately to polarize and live in fourth density according to fourth density values, and yet not having that third density light that is a little easier on you, is a little bit more forgiving and gives you more room to work. So I'm encouraging people to use the last of their third density light right now. Make that choice and get started on playing the game.
Right. And I assume I have the correct interpretation from your book that the reason we're involved in all of this is because we are a spark of the one original thought of the infinite creator. And this is, if you like, the plan for our evolution and upliftment. Hence, 2012 is an important date because that is the opportunity for us to move into the fourth density.
Right, although I don't think that everyone will, as I said, will have to face that in 2012. It's possible. I wrote a series of articles on 2012 recently in my UPI blog. It's on www.religionandspirituality.com, but you can find it from the address I gave earlier, llresearch.org. And just click on Carla's page and then click on the blog. And in that series, I spent some time working on the idea that we all might go at once, because it's out there. A lot of people think that that's exactly what's going to happen, and it engenders a lot of fear. And it really doesn't need to engender fear, because it's a natural process. Birthing is a natural process. Dying is a natural process. I died when I was 13, so I have an especially good source of information. I experienced it. My kidneys had failed. This was back in the 50s when they didn't have any kind of technology. They didn't have transplants. They didn't have dialysis. They didn't have any medicine that really addressed the kidney failure. And so you basically lived or died. And after my kidneys had failed for 2 weeks straight, my heart stopped. And it was stopped for about 2 minutes. And during that time, with no change in consciousness whatsoever, I changed environments. I was no longer in pain. I was no longer blemished. The glomerulonephritis is a very punishing disease as far as the skin. It welts up in interesting and very painful welts all over your body. I no longer had the welts. And all of a sudden, I was in a different world, a beautiful world where the colors were alive, and I could see sparkles in the air, which corresponded with the music I was hearing, which must have been the music of the spheres. At any rate, into that environment came a voiceover that said, we don't usually do this, but you picked an awfully hard incarnation, so we're going to give you a choice. You can go back, and you can finish the incarnation that you started, or you could start over and have two incarnations in which you split up the missions that you gave yourself to do.
Yes.
And it'll be a little easier on you, and you won't have all of this on your plate. You just were very greedy when you planned this incarnation. So I thought to myself, being 13 years old and a logical woman always, I thought, let's see, go back now, finish what I came to do, or two more childhoods. No.
I don't blame you.
Well, I said, I'm going to go back. And so, you know, the rest of my life has been informed by that desire not to hear that voiceover again say anything except servant well done. But I do know that there's nothing to be afraid of in dying. At all. It's actually quite a good release, especially when you're ill. So
yes.
I really wanted in that article I wrote for the UPI blog to help people stop thinking about death with fear, because it's just going to happen. I mean, you know, we know that. So it's so much better if you can look at it and say, well, yes, it's going to happen, and I look forward to the whole thing. I look forward to the, you know, reunion with my guidance and the people that I love. I look forward to walking the steps of light. I look forward to what's coming up. I can't wait, really. But, you know, while I'm here, I want to do the best I can to make it so that when I do walk the steps of light, I'll have a good grade and I'll be able to pass this graduation.
Yeah. Carl, I think you hit it on the head in the book when you said death is a transformation. Now, we have a few minutes left of the program, and I do at the end have to announce next week's guest, which won't take long, but I think it's a good time for you to give our listeners your website address and just tell us where they can obtain your latest book.
All righty. The archive site that contains all of my transcripts for the last 30 or so years and a lot of other information as well is www.llresearch.org. The community website for L&L Research is www.bringforth.org. That's bring forth, and it's a pun, you know, not only to bring forth fourth density, but also to bring forth community. So on that is the store. So when you open up www.bringforth.org, then you have the ability to click on store, and then to scroll through and look at what we have offered and buy Living the Law of One, 101 The Choice, or A Wanderer's Handbook, or Channeling Handbook. We have about, I suppose, over a dozen books that I've either written or channeled through the years on that site, including a coloring book for children, believe it or not.
That's lovely, yeah. Do you still have your BBS radio program?
We do every Saturday night, and it's repeated on Sunday morning. One of the channelings is offered without embellishment or comments. It's just strictly the taping of one of our channeling sessions, and it's I think it's on BBS Radio 3, and I think it's Pacific time. It's at 10 o'clock maybe on a Saturday night, and it's repeated at 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning. But to find those, just go to www.bbsradio.com, and you'll be able to find us there. It's very kind of Don Newsom, the head of that radio station, to offer us the space to share. And you get the channeling session from last week, or you get a channeling session from some time in the past. I don't produce one every week anymore. I produce about 18 new channeling sessions a year. So, but we have, you know, 34 years backlog, so it's a simple matter to fill in.
Carlo, I've got to stop you there because I've got about 1 minute left to announce next week's program.
Giving me an opportunity to share.
You've been brilliant. I've never had to speak so little. I mean, I left it to you.
Well, I hope you're not deprived.
Oh, no, you've done marvelously well. I mean, object is to have you speaking and not me, so that's wonderful. Anyway, thank you very much, Carla. I think we'll have to have you on again in a few months' time because I still had quite a lot of questions to ask you, so I'll be in touch on that. And for my listeners, I will say that next Friday, my guest will be Deborah Hill. She's written a book called Unlimited Life, Limiting Beliefs and Belief-Busting Power Truths, which is about developing your intuitive ability and communicating with self and others. And that's what we'll be talking about. So thank you for being with me today and for being with Carla, who's a wonderful talker. and I hope you'll be with me next week. God bless you all.